From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Welcome to Guys We Fuck,
the anti-slut shaming podcast.
Yo, you haven't said?
I'm Christina Hutton.
I'm Corinne Fisher.
And I'm your boyfriend. Bring us your slutty, your horny, and your shame.
Hey, you a slut?
Yes. Okay.
Let's talk about fucking.
Hello, fuckers. How you doing? Where you been? Did you have a good Thanksgiving? Welcome to another episode of Guys We Fucked.
It's the Anti-Slut Shaming Podcast. I'm Corinne Fisher.
I'm Christina Hutchinson.
Welcome to the show. If you are listening to this right now,
tonight,
right this second on Friday, tonight, New York City, we are performing, if there's still tickets left, at the Midnight Theater, 9:30 p.m. The ticket links are in our bio or just Google Midnight Theater NYC. You know, you can figure it
out.
You
got it. You got this. I believe in you.
That is our last Guys We Fucked show of 2023. So make sure to get on top of that.
And if you're not in New York, you can always stream the show. So if you're listening yes. to this episode, the day it comes out, get the link in our bio, baby. Get that streaming ticket. You have 48 hours to view the show. You can watch it live as it unfolds, which is exciting because we have some fun holiday surprises for you. Or you can watch it up to 2 days later.
Do a little watch party with your friends. It'll be grand.
Yes.
And if you want to email us, it's sorryaboutlastnightshow@gmail.com. This week's subject line says, found out my boyfriend is on Tinder. Oops. It happens.
Tales old as time.
Yeah, it happens.
Tune is old as song.
Hi, Corinne, Christina, and Mike. Thank you for all the laughs through the years. I am writing in because I received a message from one of my boyfriend's Facebook friends that they matched on Tinder.
Oh.
I confronted him about this and he admitted to it.
That's good.
He said he never joined for anything other than swiping, but I do not believe that, nor does it make sense to me. If Mike has any insight on why men do this, I mean, I could see why you would do it. It's like if you just need a little extra attention.
Yeah. Sure, but I think that the issue is that
he wants to flirt.
Maybe he wants to flirt.
I mean, how you do that and not flirt? You're matching.
I think there might be something deeper there that would imply that maybe he is going on with quote unquote wink wink innocent intentions. But I mean,
yeah, you're seeing if there's anything better out there.
Yeah, right. If you match with somebody, what are you gonna do?
Lose my fucking mind. That's why I got a lot more work to do.
Well, I would just dump
it. I mean, it's a dumpable offense, absolutely.
Oh, for sure. You know? You don't need to lose your mind. You just go, okay, bye. See ya. Ciao. Have a nice life. All right. Let's see. He said he never joined for anything. I confronted him about this and he admitted it. He said he never joined for anything other than swiping, but I do not believe this. If Mike has any insight on why men do this. I have always said I will never stay with a cheater, but I am uncertain what to do since we live together. 6 months left on our lease. Uh-huh. I mean, that's the pickle you got yourself into.
Yeah.
I do love and care about this person, but I do not think I can ever trust or forgive him.
That's fair.
I feel very disrespected and mad. I am looking for advice on how to deal with a situation like this. I know I need to leave, but I am struggling with facing the reality of leaving. Yeah, that's a problem with moving in with someone. Any advice would be appreciated and help me with this confusing, angry time. Thank you again for everything you guys do. I wish there was like a little ages here or like how long you've been together. If anything like this has happened before, you know, I need a little bit more information.
Yeah, some insight.
It seems
and
like
how, you, what is your relationship other than this? You know, is it good? How's your sex life? Do you communicate? Obviously not fully.
Yeah.
Or he's not communicating this little urge he's got. Right. There's like a lot of information missing here. But based on the details we have, I mean, it seems like you are writing us having already made a decision. You're saying
we support it.
You're saying, I don't think I can ever trust or forgive him. So do yourself. And honestly, he doesn't deserve it right now. But do both of yourselves the favor of, if you know right now you can never trust and forgive him, don't drag this on. My least favorite thing that people do. They pretend like they can get over it and they just like continuously make the person pay. It's like, yes, is this fucked up? But is this an offense that for which there is no repentance? No, I also don't believe that. I believe that, yes, if you wanted to, you could stay in this relationship and salvage it. I 100% think, but it seems like you know yourself well enough. You've already said, I can't trust or forgive him. I'm reading that you're probably in your 20s based on just kind of that. Honestly, there's a lot more forgiveness when you're later, but also, you know, you're less likely to get into something in the first place. And so, just leave now and save everyone the fucking time and heartache.
Yeah.
And also, it's just, I mean, at best, this is, a sign of how this guy is feeling and maybe of things that
I can't communicate it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've never heard of a guy in my circle of friends or anybody that I know that like gets on Tinder while they're in a relationship just for the swiping. Like, what an odd thing.
I know tons of guys who get on Tinder while they're in relationships, but
to meet another person.
Yeah,
right?
It's a fuck, I'm sure.
Right.
So, I don't really usually ask men why they're doing the things they do. I just assume the worst.
Sure. But I think it's fair to assume the worst here too. I mean, like what
I do it for all people, not just men, to be fair.
Yes. Yeah. Fair.
And I think I think the attention seeking is it. It's because it's like I'm trying to put myself in his position. Like, why would I do that? The only reason why I would do that, I mean, ideally, I'd hope I'd have enough, chutzpah to just be like, hey, I'm not getting enough attention from you. We need to figure this out. But that's a very quick and easy way to feel wanted, you know? So if we're trying to get in his little psyche, I want to know what else he had to say other than it's innocent swiping. Like,
well, and Christina, the other thing to think about is whether or not he wants the attention from her. Right.
Ooh, well, and that's why
very good point.
It's fucking rich when men get on us for, you know, how we dress and how it like women dress in an attention seeking manner. Because I was like, literally, if we're talking about which sex needs more attention,
it's men.
No question.
Yeah, by a landslide.
Hands down. Exactly. By a landslide. And it's like, so to finger point and say women need so much attention. Are you kidding me? You guys can't go an hour without a girlfriend.
Also, we know how to like self-soothe when we want attention. Yeah. Meaning like, I'm just post a dick pic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's super easy. We don't have to fucking rely on the people in our lives for all the attention that we crave. Like, right. We can fucking go out in the world and fucking get it.
And that's another point. Like, it is easier for women to get attention when we want it. But to say that, you know, to point the finger and say women are so attention seeking as if men aren't is hilarious.
Yeah, that's true.
You guys need constant attention. I feel like if you bring home like your a report you did at work, I have to hang it on the refrigerator and be like, look at my A+. Student, great job. You know,
how come I was thinking about this, you know, when a woman is like very caring in a relationship, it's like it's assumed sometimes in both parties of the relationship and to that woman's friends and family possibly that there's like a mother-son dynamic going on. Uh-huh. But when a man takes care of a woman in a straight relationship, there's no assumption of this father-daughter dynamic as much as there is with the mother-son thing.
Well, it hasn't happened enough that there's any statistics on it. No one's had to make up a sociological review of it because it just happens so rarely that they're like, oh, that's just like a four-leaf clover.
Yeah. Women be barren in ourselves. Yeah. Woo. All right, cool. Well, yeah, let us know, guys. Okay. What if there's a guy that's or a woman, anybody are you in a relationship right now? And are you swiping while in a relationship? I'd be curious as to why.
You can't do it.
What?
You shouldn't.
You can't do it. Shouldn't do it.
No, it's awful.
It's insane.
Don't watch porn.
It goes literally, but the thing is, it feeds into what we've been talking about for weeks, which is men won't leave the relationship.
Right.
Someone
so annoying
in a very high position who told me this past week, they were like, Corinne, I've heard you talking on Guys We Fucked about this concept that men will never leave the relationship. And the person goes, I got to tell you something. And they were like, I'm trying to be like really neutral here. Mm-hmm. They were like, I know someone whose girlfriend tried to poison him and he got
back in the relationship. Okay. That is how much men will not leave the relationship.
It's really putting the theory to the test.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. The person was like, I could tell they were like, I probably shouldn't tell you this, but I just got to tell you this because I've heard you speaking about it on Guys We Fuck.
And this really is that's a very high,
100% trustworthy source, right. High level intelligence. Yeah. Professional source.
Wow. What's up, men? You okay? What's going on? What's going on in that head and heart of yours? Mm-hmm. We know what's going on in that dick of yours. What's going on in that head and in that heart?
Just extremely fascinating.
Holy shit. Okay. Do you live in or near New Jersey? I will be headlining the Stress Factory in New Brunswick, New Jersey, January 4th through the 6th.
All right.
I think we got 5 shows total. Get your tickets. Link is in my bio at Christina Hutch on all the social media. And make sure to sign up for my Patreon if you think that group therapy once a month, well, therapy, or once a week rather, would be something that you'd be interested in, or listening in on group therapy. I host it on my Patreon. Patreon.com/Christina Hutchinson. And it's really good. And also my solo podcast, The Voices in Our Heads, is back and it's under Big Dicky Dong Mikey D. Coscarelli's new podcast network. Can I say a name?
Yeah.
It's Slickback Studios. It's going to launch
mid-January,
early January. Baby. But the next book I'm going to go into, and I want to read an excerpt on the bonus episode of Guys Who Fucked. This fucking book, I got to say, I'm having like shit pop up for me, just memory wise. And this book has been incredibly helpful. It's called What Happened to You? Conversations on Trauma, Resilience, and Healing. Mm. It's by Oprah Winfrey and Dr. Bruce Perry. This is, as far as trauma books go, I think The Body Keeps the Score was one of the ones that really, like, you know, broke the mold in terms of how we talk about the way PTSD in soldiers and in kids who have had really terrible upbringings, how that works in the brain. This, and I read the book, a lot of it was really heady and I couldn't understand a lot of the science stuff, but this book, What Happened to You? I cannot recommend this enough. I think everybody who is in an abusive relationship should read this. Anybody who has had a little bit of an adverse childhood, any chaos in your childhood should read this. This is probably, I have had so many incredible aha moments with this book where I'd be alone in my apartment bawling my fucking face off, but like old tears, and just kind of getting it out of my system and really therapizing the memories that have been popping up for me lately. I can't recommend this book enough. What Happens to You? When a book's good, I get the audio version and the hardcover version. And that's what I have with this book. The audio version is incredible. Dr. Perry and Oprah narrate their individual parts. And it's a really eye-opening, simple, gentle explanation of childhood trauma. And one of the things that clicked with me really, really hard is, because this is what my parents did to me, I would have behavioral effects of how they treated me growing up. And they would always go to me and be like, what's wrong with you, Christina? What's your problem? And the whole theory of this book is, instead of asking what's wrong with you, ask what happened to you so you can understand it and integrate it into your life and then move on from it. So I highly recommend that book. And I highly recommend you listening to The Voices in Our Heads. New episodes are out every single Monday, baby.
Is it also helpful when men on the internet comment who hurt you? Is that something that they talk about in the book?
No, see, they should read that. Those men should read this book because they're clearly very hurt.
Is that an amazing, helpful thing to say? Oh, never. Boy. Anyway, all right. So now I got a couple dates coming up. I'll do them in order of when they're happening. Chicago, Illinois, December 15th and 16th, headlining Zini's Chicago with Chloe LaBranch and Eric Freddy. Moving on, New Year's Eve, which is, if you don't know, December 31st in New York City.
Thank you.
New York Comedy Club, East Village. We're going to do Corinne Fisher's Morbid New Year's Eve again. It is, though I am in a far less morbid mood than I was last year.
Yay.
I liked the morbid content and there always will be morbidity in my soul. So that feels perfect. That's going to be a 6 p.m. show at the East Village New York Comedy Club. Emilio just texted me. That's the owner of New York Comedy Club. He's going to be getting that link up right now, guys.
Yeah, such a fun show.
And, you know, I'll book the show when I book it. And and then next year, 2024, Washington, D.C., headlining D.C. Comedy Loft, February 29th through March 2nd. That ticket link is also up. All these are via the Linktree link in my bio. I'm on Instagram and TikTok and X, aka Twitter, at Philanthropy Gal.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. help. Getting stuff off your chest is incredible. It's so therapeutic. We all carry around different stressors. Some of them are big, some of them are small, a lot of them are very big. But we keep them bottled up and it could start affecting us negatively. And then we act like a jerk to the people we love. And we're like, this is not how I want to be. Therapy has saved my life personally. There are so many benefits of it. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. And it isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. Although if you have experienced major trauma, highly recommend. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designated to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a questionnaire and you get matched with a licensed therapist, and you could switch at any time. Finding a therapist is like dating. They're not all going to work out in the first try. BetterHelp understands that. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/guys to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/guys. Guys, the weather's getting warmer. It's time to say goodbye to your jackets and all your sweaters, and you got to refresh your wardrobe. Well, luckily, I found Quince, and now you have too, because you're listening to this. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And if you go to their website, the amount of categories, they have travel, lookbooks, men, women, home, babies, and kids. Their stuff is so cute. So I own a couple items from Quince, and one of them is the Italian leather hand-woven crossbody purse in green, emerald, and I get compliments on it all the time. It's a small purse, which I really love because then I don't put as many things in it. Guys, Quince is amazing. They have very luxury items for very cheap prices. Get warm weather ready, baby, with Quince. Go to quince.com/GWF. for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/GWF to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/GWF.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Cool bitch, cool beans. Cool everything.
Wow. Always just
uncool noise though.
Always cool fucking noise here.
So there was a post on Instagram that I was like, you know what? I always thought that a very expensive engagement ring was a dumb fucking idea. No mm-hmm. offense to anybody who's got one.
Right, we talked about that with Nikki a little bit. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I always just, I'm like, this is so stupid. And as we said with Nikki, like we've all gotten tricked, men and women, everybody. Into buying this shit. Like capitalism fucking runs everything. And it's been nice to like finally realize that in my life so I don't fall for all this shit. But one of them is expensive engagement ring. And there was a study that came out that revealed a study by economics professor Andrew Francis Tan and Hugo Malion suggests that couples who spend more on their weddings, including expensive engagement rings, are more likely to get divorced.
That's not shocking.
The research, based on over 3,000 people in the United States, found a correlation between higher wedding expenses and increased divorce rates. Marriages with engagement rings costing over 1,500 euros were particularly associated with a higher than likelihood of divorce. And then I posted that to my Instagram stories. And I got evidence that supports this theory 100%. I got evidence of people who bought very expensive engagement rings and they got divorced very soon after they got married. And then ones where a couple people were like, yeah, my husband bought my ring at an antique store and we've been married for 25 years. I'm like, damn.
Well, damn, is it there you go. Are they saying, do they give you like reason? Like, cause I have two theories, like that number one, it's like people who want to get married performatively.
For a show. Yeah. 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 Mm. They didn't get into that. Cause I clicked the article and they just went through the data that they got. They didn't really make a conclusion, but I agree. I think it's all a show.
But then part two is also like part of it has to be, you know, that you are just a more wealthy person. You like financially, you're doing better off, and that, oddly enough, I think there are more variables when you're wealthy that can make a relationship go wrong.
More money, more problems.
I mean, because it's almost like when you have less money, you have less choices available to you. Mm-hmm. And you also need to rely on each other as a unit to get through the day to day. So I would think that would bond you. And whereas when you're really wealthy, you have the ability to kind of lead two separate lives.
Yes, that's very true.
And so those are like my two things that I initially thought of with those statistics.
Your first one was my theory as well. The second one makes the sense in the world. I didn't think of that one, but that makes total sense.
If you ever go to a bad wedding, you really sit there and just say like, wow, you guys really must want to get married if you're willing to do it here.
Every time I'm at a VFW hall, I think that.
These kids are going to make it. why else would you do this?
You go, why?
Homespun
wedding. Why are we here?
We're at the Holiday Inn? What the fuck? Why are you getting married?
The Holiday Inn, I wish.
Why are you getting married the Christmas Inn. Eve?
Yeah.
It's cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I agree. I think that like on the weddings I've seen weddings that are like fancier, richer, that I'm like, yeah, these people really do love each other. But then it's like my boyfriend works, he does high-end weddings. He's a singer and he'll sing these crazy weddings. And sometimes the flower budget is over, it's like $500,000. And I'm like, you're going to fucking throw these things out. Flowers? What are we doing? That's a
down
payment.
Flowers are so expensive. Yeah.
They're so expensive. And then I feel like the wedding industry really gouges you. Like the wedding dress itself doesn't cost that much to make. Obviously, of course, there are intricate ones that are, but they just know they only can buy one.
Panina Tournay, come on.
What's that?
Yeah, Vera Wang,
she's a
right?
very famous wedding dress designer.
I'm not familiar with
the designers.
Say
yes to the dress, baby.
Oh,
gotta go to Kleinfeld. I gotta be honest though, I loved going to Kleinfeld's. I was so excited. When I went to Kleinfeld's with Paula when she was picking out her wedding dress.
Is that a famous place?
It's the place to get a wedding dress.
It's not far from here.
It's right in New York City. It's like
23rd, 24th.
People fly in from all over the world. Not even the country to go to Kleinfeld's.
Really?
Yeah. My sister got a dress there too.
Yeah. It was just so fun to be there.
Yeah, it is. That's cool. Yeah. They bring you like champagne and stuff. Yeah, it's cool.
It was in the movies.
Yeah.
And it was stress-free for me because I'm like, I'm not picking out a fucking dress.
Right.
That's the ideal circumstance.
Well, and I did, like, I think I talked about this on the show, but it was great going with Paula because I was like, my best friend's better looking than all your best friends.
Yeah.
So my best friend looked good in all the dresses.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's like a model.
And I brought Princess Jasmine to just try on dresses. It was insane. It was so great.
Yeah, that also speaks to the why if I get married, I want my wedding to be an immersive theater experience that's mostly comedic.
Only other caveat that I'll add to this as like a theory I just think ethnic weddings tend to be big. Hispanic, Jewish, Italian. And I think that is also a bit of a, listen, like my parents,
like culture pushing you to get married. Your culture pushing you to get married?
It's such a to-do. Like it's like if you get married, at least in the Italian culture or the Jewish culture too, you're expected, I think, by the families to have, especially Italian and Italian or a Jew and a Jew. Like they want you, they want you on the chairs in a big banquet hall and stuff, you know? So I don't know. I think that's a factor also, but I do tend to agree with both of those theories. I think like there are times where you see a big wedding, like a lavish wedding on Instagram or whatever. We were just like, start the clock.
What is this for?
This has got a year and a half tops.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, like recently, like I don't, a lot of people our age who have gotten married, I don't actually see because people are always like, get ready for the divorces. And it's like, I haven't really seen very many divorces and it would be around the time when at least like round one of divorces would start. And I really haven't seen them.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
Yeah, that's nice.
A lot less people are getting married though. Yeah. So that plays into it. But
I feel like that's like the economy in general is kind of crap. And like, I forget like when our parents were our age or younger, they could have only one job and buy a house and have kids.
For sure.
And we can't do that now.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, no, it's sad. I never like rejoice when people get divorced.
Oh, no.
Like none of my,
even if you called it, it's like, I wish I was
or
wrong.
Or like even any of like my exes who are married, like I wouldn't be happy if any of them got divorced, truthfully. Like that doesn't make me happy. That's not good.
How are you?
All right. I have something from the internet too.
Sweet. Love the internet.
I just saw, this was just like a question that they were asking on Crazy Bitch Problems, which I do follow.
I love that account.
And so I thought it would be a good question for the group. And it says, which is the hardest for you to say? A, I apologize. B, I need help. C, I love you. Or D, I was wrong.
I need help. I'd have my leg get cut off and bleed out before I say that.
Probably for me too, I think.
That's so humiliating to say you need help for me.
Yeah. It's okay. I was like, I'm going to go with I was wrong for me. The biggest one answer in the comments was I need help.
Really?
I think a couple years ago, I worked really hard on asking like for help when I need it, because I was like, you're only punishing yourself when you don't ask for help.
Right. Totally.
And you're holding yourself back when you don't ask for help, because you're then doing, you know, all of the work. I mean, like, if even they talk about it in the Robert Greene, you know, Pat, what the fuck, the,
well, it's 48 laws of power.
Yeah. I always forget how many there are. There's so many laws of power.
I know. So he probably wrote the 49th book.
You know, I mean, basically 48 laws of power. If you're going to whittle it down to like one sentence, it's like, always take credit for work and never do any. That's the book. I just summarize it for you now. You could take all of it, be really pleasant to be around. And
pleasant to be around. That's a good one.
A smile on your face, social, remembers people's names.
A little wink.
Do very little work. Know how to delegate the work and give people who are working for you pats on the back and tell them that they're doing a good job, and then take all the credit for the work. That's the 48 Laws of Power in a nutshell. That's what I learned from that book. And so, you know, as much as like we like to put our, you know, pride ourselves on never asking for help, it's literally the worst thing you can do for success. When I think of, you know, I certainly know a lot of successful people who work very hard, but I also know a large chunk of people who don't work hard at all and just kind of float. Mike and I are probably thinking of some of the same people right now. Yeah. I know we are. And they just kind of float on by because they are consistently asking for help. I got in a really interesting conversation with an Uber driver. He was taking me from my store back to my apartment, and he was like a clothing designer who had been really popular. Like, he had an urban like streetwear brand, and he had been really popular. Like Alicia Keys had worn his clothing and all this stuff, and it's still around now, but he was having some trouble. So we were kind of like spitballing some ideas for him to get his business up and running again. And I was like, dude, I was like, if you helped all these people in their career and gave them free clothing, I was like, and then you're telling me that they are now really successful people. I was like, go back and ask those people who you helped initially help you now.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, my wife said that too. And I was like, yeah,
do it.
I was like, when are you saving this favor for? Or like, why are you letting your pride get in the way? Like, those people had no problem riding your coattails to the top. So go back and say, and you don't have to like, you know, say, I did this for you, so now you have to do that for me. Like, that's not a good energy to bring
say,
to the
hey,
table.
I'm driving an Uber. Can you help me?
Yeah, just say, hey, like, I feel like my brand's not popping off the way it used to be. If I send you a free sweatsuit, would you put it on and wear it on Instagram?
Right.
And like, anyone who remembers who they're from and has any like sense of decency and reciprocity,
yes,
will pop it on.
You know what though?
They're going
to
be excited.
So many people
to promote it.
All the people who helped me, I will never forget. I will never forget.
They have a special place in your heart forever.
Haven't we had this discussion probably off mic more than anything though? There are so many people,
yeah,
at least in this business,
yeah,
who don't ever remember where they came from.
And then those people are sociopaths.
Yeah, but they're in the business.
They're there though.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, for sure. But I mean, I think like it's night. Like, people do like smell that about them. So even if they do continue to succeed, it makes me happy that no one is really falling for their bullshit. You know?
Sure.
Like that does make me happy. It makes me think that people aren't as blind as they sometimes appear to be. Mm-hmm. So that's nice.
That is nice. You know who's also nice?
Today's guest.
Yeah, fucking guest today. Oh my God. And guys, please, I just want to say before we intro and before you hear this, check out the links in the description of today's episode where you will find resources and places to donate and places to learn more about the topics discussed. Okay, that's very important. This person, she is a nurse, a mother, a wife, and she's one of my dearest friend sisters. And she is currently in the midst of chemotherapy treatment for a very rare form of breast cancer. And she has a lot of fascinating pieces of advice and wisdom to share with us. Please welcome to the show, Danya Francis.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Okay, everybody, we are here with Danya Francis. I'm so excited to have you. We go way back. Your sister Daria was one of my first friends when I moved to New York. So we are here today under circumstances that I wish, you know, weren't the case. However, so Danya, you were recently diagnosed with breast cancer.
Yes.
And we'll get into the specific type, but if you could walk us through kind of how you came to notice it and what it was like in terms of the medical intervention that you experienced along the way and how you had to advocate for yourself.
Got it. Well, advocating for yourself is the most important thing when it comes to your health. I'm actually a nurse practitioner as well. So for pediatrics. So I do know a little bit about advocating for patients. I've been a nurse for a pretty long time. But, you know, for yourself, sometimes you're not always the best, you know. People are busy since COVID, you know, understaffing. You feel bad for the staff, the doctors, everyone's so busy. Sometimes you don't want to push things too much because, oh, it's okay. It could wait till tomorrow. Something like this, definitely not. I had a mammogram. I turned 40 this past January. So,
congrats.
You know, the big thing you do when you turn 40, everybody gets a mammogram.
Get your boobies squished.
Get them squished. I didn't get one in January. I got one in June. So I waited a little bit. And I went for my mammogram and, you know, it was nothing too crazy. They did the mammogram. They said, listen, be surprised if you don't get called back. It's your first. So we have no baseline. We have nothing to compare this to.
Oh, you know? So your first mammogram. So
they did say like, you may get called back for some further imaging because
we've never seen it.
We have no record of your boobs. We have not, you know, we have no idea what they look like in a mammogram. I've never had a mammogram before.
How was a mammogram?
It wasn't bad. It really wasn't. I mean, I don't have them anymore, but I didn't really have big boobs. But, you know, it wasn't very uncomfortable. Like everyone says, I mean, they squeeze and do things like that. It was pretty quick. So I had that done. And as I was waiting for my results, they said it would take about 10 days. I, you know, was watching a show actually that they were talking about breast cancer. I was getting really emotionally involved with the show, feeling very upset about it. The show ended and I got my report in my portal. It was signed off, like good to go. See you next year. I looked at my report, opened it up. It said, you know, nothing abnormal. Everything looks good. I'm like, great. Oh my God. Thank God. All this stuff I've been worrying about by watching this show. I'm good. I'm in the clear. I started worrying because I had 12 friends I graduated high school with. You know, it's almost like you get marked safe from something, right? Marked safe from my mammogram. All my friends, I got their mammograms. Everyone was good. And then you start thinking about the statistics, 1 in 8 women get breast cancer. I was like, oh my God, imagine if that could be me. Like, you know, you just start thinking like the worst while you wait.
Yeah.
For this
it's
stuff.
Like when you go to the ER and they're like, well, let's give you a pregnancy test. You want an AIDS test too? And you're like, I guess so. And then you're like, oh fuck, now I'm worrying if
you're
I have
like
AIDS.
Oddly nervous for no reason.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. Oh yeah. I've been nervous about tests like that before. I mean, ridiculous things.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had the mammogram done. The report came back. It said everything was fine. But I was like, I don't know. It says that I have dense breasts. I'm like, what does that mean? You know, I'm like, I'm a nurse practitioner. I should know what this means, but I don't really know much about breast health. So like, besides like doing exams and checking people for lumps, things like that, I'm like, wow, heterogeneously dense breasts means that it's harder to actually detect cancer. So it said that in my report.
In your mammogram.
In my mammogram saying you have heterogeneously dense breasts. this isn't always detected. Like this can't always detect cancer.
However, you're good to go.
But you're good to go. See you next year.
Cute.
I'm like, wait,
Cute.
I'm kind of confused. I got this mammogram to see if I have cancer. Isn't that a mammogram?
And the little, whole idea. The little PS there would make you think that I'm not good to go.
Yeah, like down below. Like New Jersey law says, we have to let you know you do have dense breasts. We can't always detect cancer.
It's like, so wait, that's a law in... Okay, so, oh, right. You guys were talking about that earlier. That's a law in New Jersey that was passed saying you have to let them know.
They have to inform you have dense breasts and that it can't always detect cancer. But there's like no like standard procedure, it seems. Like when that happens, where's the ultrasound? Like, what's the next step? Like, why aren't I getting an ultrasound immediately?
Yeah.
Like that day, even, you know, like if you could see it or when you get the report back, like, okay, now your next step is to get an ultrasound. There was none of that. It was just signed off, put in a portal, like nobody called. It was just that. So I went
You're on your own,
pretty much. I mean, I was, you know, totally not comfortable with that. So I started doing a breast exam like that night when I got the report back.
How do you do that?
So you would do it once a month.
Okay.
You do it like pretty much 5 days after your period starts.
Or if you don't get your period
or whatever, you do it the same time every month. You want to like stand, look in a mirror, put your hands on your waist, check your breasts for any changes. So any dimpling of the skin, any inversion of your nipples, any nipple discharge, anything that you see abnormal, just looking at your breasts, like different, you know, maybe like different, like asymmetry, anything like that, if it's not even. And then you would lift one arm and then you feel with like the pads of your fingers. And then you're going to feel
like on the tips of your fingers.
Yeah. Like the pads here.
Yeah.
You're going to lift one arm at a time and kind of just like feel all around the breast, right?
Just your heart
like circling around.
So sensitive. I would, I'm not going to do well for any lumps.
You go into the armpit. And everything, even up here in the collarbone area, you're going to feel like all that area.
And
then you go to the other side and you kind of just
And you do arm up
arm
for the boob that you're feeling up.
And then you, you just kind of like rotate around the area and just feel for any lumps, bumps, anything like that. Any changes, you would want to, you know, say something right away and make sure you're getting the proper diagnostic test after that.
Yeah.
So I started doing that night when I got my mammo back. And I was like, wait, there's no way. I don't feel anything. I'm like, I'm just playing tricks. You know, like there's no way. But I started to feel kind of a little something on my left breast. So I went to my GYN at the time and I let her know. She actually felt it. She said that it didn't feel suspicious and that I, you know, I said, you know, I don't feel comfortable with this mammo report. I have dense breasts. What's going on? Shouldn't I be getting an ultrasound to make sure nothing's there? And plus this lump.
Yeah.
She said it didn't feel suspicious. And okay, I will order an ultrasound, get it in the next 6 months. So if I can nail anything home right now, don't wait 6 months.
Yeah. Does your GYN, does she do breast exams at every visit that you had? Because mine does.
They do. Yeah. She would do the visit, like the well visit. She would definitely do like a breast exam, you know, kind of just like quickly going over the breast area and everything.
Some I've noticed
are better than others. You know, like it's just everyone's kind of different. I had one lady
that just went swipe. I'm like, that's not thorough. Yeah. Come on.
You kind of want it to be a little more thorough. But, you know, again, like everyone is so busy lately, it seems that it's like you need to put the power in your own hands because it's just scary because people make mistakes, right? Doctors make mistakes.
Like, yeah. Oh, I've learned a lot like, from Corinne's experience with doctors of having to like
make
advocate
mistakes.
For her,
they're human beings,
herself and her.
So at the end of the day, it's like we have to do the best to like just make sure we're in the driver's seat with our health. So, so she felt that, she said next 6 months, whatever. I was like, okay, I'm mad at myself now for not that day being like, no, I want one right now. Like, give me my ultrasound today.
Yeah.
Because with cancer, things change quickly. So I, you know, got it in the next month, you know, because it was not suspicious. So I went and it was a pretty crazy day that day. I went in. My husband just happened to be off work and he was like, come, he came with me. I'm like, you know, just come with me just in case. Thank God, because it was like a rough day. I went in. The radiologist was like freaking out.
Wait,
like,
how so?
As far as like on a level of like alerting, like the way that my gyno was like, no big deal. Everything's like so great. This one was like, what is going on? Who felt this lump?
Upon seeing my ultrasound.
And I'm looking there laying up and I'm, you know, a medical professional looking at it. And I'm like, that doesn't look like an like a benign,
like a non,
like
a non,
I could just tell. I could tell the energy in the room. Yeah. The nurses were like rubbing my leg. Like it was just like a very, like I could just tell. I was
and the ultrasound,
like, oh,
you get results immediately, right? Because it's like when you get a when you have a baby, immediate. You see what they're seeing.
They were able to, like the ultrasound tech doesn't say anything. She was like on my right breast and saying nothing. She was like, are you staying for your results today? I was like, yeah, definitely. I want to see my results today. Then she went to my left breast and she's like, and I'm like, yeah, I have a little lump there, you know?
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, okay. And then she left the room. I was like, oh no, this is great.
Yeah. Was your husband in the room with
he
you?
He was in the waiting room. Unfortunately, they didn't let him back there. Even when I knew something was going on, I said, can my husband come back here? But like in the, so when you're getting like your mammos and your ultra, all the women are like in spa robes as if you're at the spa. So like you're like topless, but wearing robes. So they don't like let men back there.
I guess it's like,
for protection.
This isn't exactly like, you know,
I'm like, he could care less.
A pornographic feel.
Exactly. I don't think he's very excited to be back here right now.
A bunch of titties.
Yeah, it's definitely
the only time a man
see.
Is not excited to see titties.
Someone in the past has caused a problem.
Exactly.
And which is why that some rule pervert. Has now been instated. There's always a reason why the rule is instated, and it's because some guy fucks something up.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, all right, I guess I'll just figure this out.
Yeah.
You know, he's out there and I'm texting him. I'm like, oh, they don't seem like, They seem worried. He's like, oh, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Like so positive always, you know, because how can you not be?
Yeah.
So I'm the opposite. I'm like, I have a cancer. I'm like, I know it. I'm like, this
and
sucks.
You're right.
I knew it. So they, you know, they said we have to do biopsy. We could do it in about an hour and a half. I said, okay, we don't normally do it on Thursdays, but we're going to do it. I'm like, oh my God, I really have cancer. I'm like, if they're like squeezing me in, I'm like, I know this isn't good.
Yo, your girl got cancer based off of these signs. I'm putting two and two together.
So, yeah, and I know how
the leg
works.
Rubbing isn't a good sign.
Leg rubbing.
That's not a good sign.
The eyes.
I didn't even know that was legal.
Just, you know, the just put cucumbers over the your eyes, Tanya.
Yeah, I was like, oh,
more
God.
Spa stuff.
I was like, I'm a nurse.
Yeah.
Like, I should probably let you all know while you're freaking out about my lump that I'm a nurse. And I know what's going on here.
Yeah.
So all those signs told me that that's what
what's
was going
the biopsy
on.
Is when they take a needle into the lump.
It's called a core needle biopsy. So they took like a big, like numbed the area.
Okay.
One area wasn't numbed very well, which was just wonderful. but they numbed the area and took 9 samples. That was another thing that I knew. I was like, 9 samples. Oh, I'm like, come on, you know, like what's going on?
And the big, that needle that big, like your freaking forearm.
Yeah.
That's the size
of
the needle.
Yeah, it was pretty big.
So, and your husband couldn't be with you when you got it?
No, no. He was in the waiting room because of the boobs.
Because some dude named Larry fucked it up.
So they did the biopsy and then it was like 3 to 5 days. So I
had a great relaxing time for 3 to 5 days.
That was on a Thursday.
What do you do? Like,
I did a lot of gummies.
Hell yeah.
Because I had to relax. I didn't know, like, and I'm not really one to do that, but I'm like, I need to relax. Like, you know, I had to try to like kind of shut my mind off because like I already knew. I mean, it was like, I was already that whole weekend, like, I have cancer, you know?
Right.
And like, my husband's like, you're nuts. Like, you're manifesting this. Like, this is, I'm like, I know, but I know that I have it.
You also like, know your body better than anybody ever could.
Exactly. And I was just, I could tell, you know, by the looks and the ultrasound report, hypoechoic mass. I'm like, that doesn't sound benign.
Mm.
You know, it just, those things. So I was at work on Tuesday and on my lunch break. And a call came in and I'm in my car, like take the call. And it was the GYN and said, I'm so glad we decided to get this ultrasound.
The
I'm
one like, who didn't order mean, the ultrasound
for you until you asked. If I listened to you, I'd be getting it at Christmas, but
nope,
whatever.
Lady.
That was not the time.
Well, fuck this wee shit. So, I got a bigger fish to fry.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I got it. She didn't really know much about it. She just knew I had invasive ductal carcinoma and also DCIS, which is like ductal carcinoma in situ, which means that it's like contained to the breast. So that's kind of like this, the stage zero, like the lowest one you can get, non-invasive.
Because it hasn't,
it hasn't spread. It's usually just like contained. But then I also had invasive ductal carcinoma. So.
Okay.
That was what she told me. I needed a breast specialist right away.
Gosh, you had to get this news from the person who was like, just wait.
Yeah, you have 6 months. You're good to go. Like, see you later. Yeah, so she, you know, obviously, I'm sure that wasn't an easy phone call to make.
Of course not.
So I was just hysterically crying. I hung up the phone. I came out of my car. My medical assistant was in the parking lot. I just started crying to her. I have breast cancer. I can't go in there and see the rest of my babies this afternoon. Yeah. Like it was, I had a whole slew of patients I had to see after lunch and I couldn't function.
Yeah.
So I went in. Thankfully, I work with all women and my boss was like, go home.
Yeah.
And you're out tomorrow
too. We
got
you.
Yeah. Figure out what you need to do. You're going to be okay. We'll figure this out. Like, you know, so I did. I just like drove home and I'm like, I can't even call my husband. I'm just going to tell him when I get there because he was home because he's a theatrical teamster. So he's been on strike. So, you know, blessing in disguise in a way because he's been home with us, you know.
But then when the union's on strike, the people who work for the union don't get paid.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fucked. Yeah,
exactly. So it's been like, you know, when it rains, it pours kind of thing for us, but we're figuring it out. Luckily, my sister, the angel that she is,
she's such a fucking angel.
She created this like meal train for us that was supposed to start with just a few meals and people just started donating a lot of money. And it was just very
good,
amazing because I don't know how we probably do it without that. Because
two kids and then one of the parents is not earning money.
He's not earning right now because he's been on the strike. And because he normally drives talent.
Yeah.
And I am a nurse practitioner working in a pediatric office where I can get sick and I had to have surgery. So I had to take off work.
Oh, so you don't get paid for that?
I'm like on short-term disability. It's like, you know, because I don't have like a full-time gig. I was like, it's called per diem as a nurse. You kind of just work and you get paid as you work. Craziness. So I, you know, had that diagnosis. You know, quickly got to breast cancer specialists. We wound up at Sloan and I had surgery on August 31st.
Okay.
I had both my boobs removed.
It was stage?
Stage two. They saw in my pathology that there were some hormone positives. There's different types of breast cancers. So they saw some hormonal positivity like estrogen and progesterone. So with that, they decided to go in to do surgery first.
And remove both.
So they could have done a lumpectomy. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be really aggressive. I said, you know what? I am not messing around. I have two kids. I have a lot of life to live.
Yes.
I don't really care about my boobs.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
I'd rather be there.
Honestly, I really don't. So I decided to get a bilateral mastectomy. That was kind of a choice.
So they get like taken off.
They took both my boobs
off. So you have like a... No, that's wild. Is that wild?
It was wild. And I was in the hospital for one night. That's what's even more wild. It's crazy. Mm. But I mean, pretty amazing what they do. Like the surgeon literally went in, took out both my boobs, a couple of lymph nodes, because that's where they travel first. So
your nipples?
My nipples are gone. Yep.
They're gone.
You could do nipple sparing, but I decided not to spare my nipples because I was scared if anything spread there. So I said, don't spare them. Just take everything because that's something for another day. We'll figure that out.
Yeah.
So she did, you know, she took off both breasts. Thank God I did that option because my one tumor kind of started growing another tumor. And they biopsied everything and they found out that there was no hormonal receptors and I have triple negative breast cancer.
Triple negative breast cancer.
Which is like a breast cancer that affects, it's only about 10 to 15% of breast cancers are triple negative.
Okay.
So it's actually a little more rare and it's a lot more aggressive.
Right. And you were saying this is a cancer that's common for Black women.
Yes.
Which is like important to know because I feel like the medical industry is shit to women, like in so many ways, but also too, you read so like about Black women just getting
not
the care that they need, which
absolutely.
Is so fucked.
Yeah. And so that's what I found, that it actually affects Hispanic and Black women more.
Wow.
I mean, I'm neither.
Right.
I mean, I'm Italian, Irish, you know, German, Scottish. I don't know, but.
All the whites.
Yeah. And I don't have any, like I did the genetic testing. I don't have like BRCA or anything like that. So
you could see.
Yeah. You can get like genetic testing done. Mm. So I don't have any of that. So they're like, yours is just spontaneous. I'm like,
oh, cute.
Awesome. So, you know, I've been blessed with this. That's the kind I have. So like after surgery, you know, I was healing from surgery, feeling pretty good, like, you know, getting on the road to recovery. And then that came back, the biopsy results saying, actually, you don't have estrogen and progesterone. It's triple negative. Mm. So that was like another kind of hard hit because it was like a new diagnosis all over again. Mm.
And was the plan always to do chemo after the double mastectomy?
It was. If triple negative, sometimes, I mean, you would do mostly chemo before because they find that it like shrinks tumors and everything like that. But with hormonal, when they see that, they actually do mastectomies first.
Okay.
So that's why I had my mastectomy first.
It's aggressive, so you want to.
Yeah. So I'm glad like everything was removed. I actually had a PET scan too after my surgery. So they scanned like everything from my head all the way to my thighs.
Oh.
And nothing lit up. Thank God. So, I mean, that was probably one of the scariest days of my life.
Besides, PET scan.
Oh, yeah.
Because you had already been through the surgery.
I don't know what else could have happened. You know, I found out it was a more aggressive type. I found out it kind of sort of traveled into one lymph node. There was some cells in another, but the other two lymph nodes were clear. So I was like, oh, my God. You know, so then I just went to the PET scan that day and I just kept repeating like a mantra over and over again. It is just here. It has not traveled. You have nothing.
Yeah.
No evidence of disease anywhere else. And, you know, those results came back like 2 days later. It was rough. I was praying extra hard and I think I didn't even talk for a whole day to anyone. I just sat outside and stared.
Yeah. And like collected your energy and just focused.
You don't really know what's going to happen with something like that. You know, nothing you can do.
And having two kids is that adds a totally different.
It's been very scary. That came out clear and I started chemo. So now I've had two rounds. I've got
two out of eight total.
Out of eight total. I go every other Monday.
And what's chemo like?
It's not as bad as I guess you would think. Okay. I mean, you know, they give you a lot of meds beforehand. They really do a lot to manage like the nausea and the side effects and all that kind of stuff. I'm trying this cold capping, you know, save my hair. We'll see. I'm not sure. My chemo's pretty strong.
For people who don't know is, you were saying this earlier, they are hooking like a cap to your head that blows air conditioning.
So it's like hooked up to like a portable air conditioner and it's like a cap that goes on your head. And it's like freezing. You have like brain freeze. Like the first 15 minutes, you're like shocked. And then I think you just get numb because then you're like,
I'm so cold. I can't feel it. So if it hurts, I wouldn't know. Yeah.
So you have to like keep it on the whole treatment and it's supposed to protect your hair follicles. I mean, I'm doing this literally for my kids. If I had to, like, my husband's like, do you want me to just buzz your head like tonight? Like, he doesn't care. Like, I don't care really about that. It's really about, I have a 4-year-old son and a 2-year-old daughter. So I'm so scared. Like when I cut my hair short before I started chemo, cause I used to have long hair and I cut it pretty short just so it's not as like bad when it starts falling out. My son was like, I miss your ponytail. I'm like, God, what am I going to do if I go bald?
Right.
I'm like, oh. Like,
how is it telling your kids? Like, how do you do that?
I don't know. I mean, I had to have surgery. And with the surgery, I had all these drains and things like that. So my 2-year-old has no idea. She's just trying to like yank at them and has no idea. I mean, I don't let them see me without like a bra on.
Yeah.
Because obviously now I look very different than I did before.
Yeah.
But my son was very aware of the drains and he was like, oh, mommy, your drains. Oh, like watching them and stuff. And even now when I'm like not feeling well from chemo those mornings, like he'll actually like be like, come on, mommy, I'll help you walk down the stairs. And I'm like,
oh my God. The kids are so pure.
Yeah. It's so adorable.
Yeah.
And like, it's just, but it's like, how was
telling them? Like, did you and your husband like say like, okay, this is how we want to tell, like, it's like one of those moments where you would never fucking consider that until it comes to the circumstances where you have to tell them. But like,
yeah, it's awkward because they're so young. Like he's 4 and she's 2.
How do you know what they can
handle? We don't tell her much, you know, just like, hey, be careful. Mommy's got a boo-boo in her boobies.
Yeah.
And like with my son, like we're just kind of like, mommy's having surgery. She has a boo-boo on her boobies.
Yeah.
And now we're trying to explain to him about like the medication and that mommy's going to be tired today.
Yeah.
I know mommy might not feel well because she has the medication to make her boobies better. Yeah. Like that's kind of like, you know, that kind of talk, you know?
Yeah.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
My husband's trying to figure out if we should involve him when we shave my head, or that's a question for my therapist.
So you're going to shave?
Right.
I'm going to ask her what she thinks. I don't know. Because yeah. I don't know.
I got a list of stuff for therapy now, Doc.
Yeah.
Right. Because how do you know what's going to damage? I mean, being a person in the world is damaging. So it's that's going to happen. So
you worry about everything.
You know, parents are going to, as much as thought as they can put into it, it's the kids going to get fucked up in some way from something. But I imagine, that's a lot to consider.
It's a lot. Yeah. So I'm trying to figure that out. That's my biggest thing right now, is like, besides feeling sick and getting through all this, is like how to kind of approach that with them.
To navigate that with them.
Yeah. Cause I'm sure it's gonna happen. It's kind of like,
are you going to shave your head?
I mean, if it keeps falling out the way it is, like, you know, it's definitely, it's falling out, but like probably slower than if I didn't do the cold cap. So that's good.
Yeah.
But you know, if it keeps falling out, it's just very messy. So I'm like,
right.
It's getting kind of like
clogging the drains.
Yeah. Tough, you know, cause I just feel like it's keep coming out. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I'm not going to shave it till I feel like I have to.
Yeah.
But I guess at that point we'll figure out how we're involving him or what, you know, and if I'm doing a
wig, might want to do it.
Scarves, or
you can get matching, like, cause he's a boy. So you could do like matching
buzz cuts.
Buzz cuts.
That's what my husband said. He's like, we can all do cute little crew cuts.
Right. That's
like,
adorable.
He's like, we don't have to bick your head.
Also too, like, you can experiment with like Audrey Hepburn, bangs. Like, you can experiment, you know, how you have a Barbie and you're like, I can give it any hair do I want.
That's
with
true.
This pair of scissors. You kind of like, it's lower stakes of like, I don't know, let's see what a bob looks like or a bowl cut. Like, you can like slowly cut it.
So yeah, I mean, that's, I guess we can make it kind of fun. I mean, my husband's like, listen, I didn't marry you for your hair. Didn't even marry you for your boobs. I married you for your ass. You know?
And so, that ain't going nowhere.
And your face.
Yeah. He's like, so, your ass and your face.
I'm like, and my personality, right? And my smarts.
And my heart, my big heart, right?
So, you know, I mean, that's something we'll have to tackle.
Do you feel like different about like your femininity, or was that never even like a thing? I know, like, once you have kids, like, the focus is completely readjusted in a way that I just don't understand yet. But like, do you feel different as a woman, or are you just kind of focused on like day to day? Like, how do I make this day good so we're all good and I feel okay?
Yeah, it's odd. Like, I feel like, you know, you would think losing your breasts that like you would like feel like your like womanhood was taken from you. But like, I started wearing like earrings. I got a few new bras now.
Cute.
Like, you know, I have like my expanders in. I get my little like saline pumps every couple of weeks.
Oh,
like,
in the boobs?
So I have like, when they took my boobs out, they actually put expanders in. So the expanders are there to like kind of like stretch your skin and get it ready for my reconstructive surgery that I'll have at the end of all of this.
Okay.
So it's like,
you could come out of that with knockers.
Yeah. I mean, basically we're kind of like figuring out, I get like fills every 2 weeks now, and they just fill up with saline, and I get to try on bras to see if like this size works for me or what I want to do.
Whoa.
So
designer breasts.
Yeah. So it's like, know, to me, I was never attached to my breasts, I guess, you know, like I couldn't really breastfeed my kids very well. Like, it did a little bit, and
that's,
you know,
great. Then
growing up, I really never loved them. Like, you know, like, it was like, not so like my, like, it wasn't like my like thing, you know, like, we're like, you know, like my boobs, you know,
so,
like,
in high school, middle school, it's like, oh, so-and-so, she's got the tits. She's got the tits weren't
on
your name card.
So it's like, I don't know. And I guess just because I was so scared for my life and for my kids that it was like, take my boobs, please. Like, just don't take my life, you know, like, just take them. I don't really care.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, I wear a bra and I feel normal. Like,
awesome.
You know, pretty much. Like, and it's funny because I'll see people and they'll be like, oh, wow, it looks like you have boobs.
It's like, people are just like, honestly, I found like, anytime I'm going through something, people have such a hard time tackling anything that's like the important part of an issue that they'll just start talking about the part that literally doesn't matter, which is like, it's like, oh, did you not hear the part where I almost fucking died? Like, you're worried about my tits. People are idiots, but it's just like it's their own nervousness around stuff.
It is. People really don't know what to say to
somebody
when
they get
diagnosed.
It's like embarrassing.
It's really awkward.
It's
and like,
so awkward.
I'm like, I almost feel bad for people. Like,
I know.
when they see me actually out in public, it's like,
it's pathetic.
It's like, oh God, it's Sonia. You know, like, it's like awkward. And I'm like, it's fine. I'm fine. It's all right. Like, you know, like, that's why I like, I kind of like put myself out there and shared it with a lot of people because I just felt like, you know, why not? I'm like, I really have no shame in that. Like, I don't really care.
Also, too,
like,
part of your story is you advocated for yourself and detected something a lot earlier than if you were to allow yourself to be left in the hands of the medical professions that you were in the hands of.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, we got to not do that ever. Like,
6 months can make a really big difference.
Yeah. Especially with that aggressive of a spread.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So it's. It's definitely not something to like play with. It's like if someone says wait 6 months, it's like, why?
Yeah.
Just don't wait, you know?
So so you have 6 more rounds of chemo, right?
6 more rounds of chemo.
And then after that, what happens?
I get like a month off and then I do 5 weeks of radiation. And then
radiation is different than
chemo. Yeah, what's the difference between chemo and radiation?
Chemo is like the infusion. So right now I had the surgery, everything was taken out. Now they do the infusions every other week where they're killing cancer cells that might have escaped, like or gone somewhere or might have been, because you can't really tell if you have cancer cells like from a scan. So they're killing it now with the chemo systemically. So it's like all over everything. And, you know, they're killing some healthy cells too. That's why you lose your hair and things like that. And then after you're done with chemo, I'm doing radiation for 5 weeks. So for 5 weeks, I have to go every single day for an hour. And I lay on a table.
Every day for 5 weeks.
Every day for 5 weeks. Whoa. Monday through Friday. Not the weekends. Monday through Friday for an hour for 5 weeks. And they're going to radiate like my whole area here.
What does that mean, like, radiate? Like
they basically like
a tanning bed?
Like, yeah, it's kind of like you lay on a table and they kind of just shoot radiation at you. And they're just like basically going to like light up all my lymph nodes and that whole area and like radiate everything to make sure it doesn't like come back.
So this is just an extra precautionary
Extra precaution. So basically that's what you do radiation for too.
What are the side effects of that?
Fatigue, like skin rashes. Okay. Like, I mean, I'm lucky I'm doing it kind of like in the winter because you wouldn't want to be in the sun or anything. And you know, cause like your skin is going to be pretty like
sensitive
to everything. Maybe itchiness, stuff like that. And fatigue, of course, cause everything's just fatigue. It seems, you know, like with chemo and then it's all fatigue.
But they gave you, for the chemo, you were saying earlier that they give you steroids, which is mandatory because if you didn't take steroids, you'd just be like asleep 24/7.
I don't think you'd be able to like move without the steroids. Yeah, they'd give it to you like on the day of chemo. And then it was funny, like the first time I got the chemo, like the next day I took the 3 I was prescribed. And then I was feeling really energetic. I wanted to go on like a hike. We never really hike. I like climbed the top of a little mountain. I mean, I was feeling really on top of the world. Chemo Donnie, basically.
Yeah.
So I called the nurse and she was like, "Ooh, you sound really hyper." She's like, "Tomorrow, maybe take one less." I'm like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah.
So I started taking like less because I guess I'm very sensitive to steroids and was like hopping off the wall, not sleeping for 24 hours.
Let's organize every drawer in the house.
I did. I organized a lot of things. I did a lot of writing. So
that's great.
Yeah.
That's
helpful. Very productive.
But do they have an addictive property, steroids? Because I mean, there's so many. Yeah. I'm like so sensitive now because there's all these documentaries you see where you're like, oh, I had one problem and then they gave me this like pain relief medication and now I'm addicted to that. And now I have a second problem.
Yeah.
So with steroids, it's kind of like that rebound. Like if you try to get off of steroids, it's kind of hard because you feel like crap when you get off of steroids. Right. So if you take them for too long, it actually damages like your immune system. It's just hard to like get off of something you're taking every day.
Right. Especially like something that's upping you like that. Cause you go, oh, I missed that feeling.
Exactly. You know? Oh yeah. By Thursday, Friday, I'm like, oh, I wish I had steroids because I felt so good.
Yeah.
You know?
You're like, chopping them up in your kitchen, like snorting them. All right. Cool. Gotta make this last longer.
Next time I see Donnie's gonna have a fucking 6-pack and benching 280. Like, damn. Donnie loves.
I know. Boys. No, they're definitely. It's nice.
Good though. You deserve
feeling.
To have like some fucking
a few
energy.
Days of like, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it then and then you kind of get back to your normal like the week later, and then you go back for it a week later. So it's like, you know,
you could get that hit again.
Yeah. It's like every other week
you're
feeling.
Fiending for chemo because you get the roids.
How is it spiritually?
So I've actually had some spiritual experiences since this has all happened. I started taking like a meditation and journaling class on Mondays with this great organization, Surviving Breast Cancer. I found this group of like 8 women. I just kind of like stumbled upon it. And it's like every Monday at 10 a.m. we kind of all sign on. And this wonderful woman, Gloria from Canada, is like leading us through a meditation. And then she gives you 5 minutes to just write. And I'm like, I haven't wrote. I haven't like sat here and like wrote or been told to write.
Yeah.
Probably since I was in school. Like, I'm like, you know, I never like wrote since my kids have been born. I like hardly write anything.
It's a lot different than typing. Like people say typing, typing a paper.
And write. Yeah. And like, you kind of like go through this meditation. She really like transcends you, I feel like.
Meditation.
And like, you write what you see. And the meditation.
Oh, cool.
So like, I've gone like, you know, on Mondays a few times where I haven't had chemo, and I really have like felt like the meditation. And whoa. Like, I've like shared what I've wrote. And now two times that I've shared with them, they're like, we absolutely love this. Can we share this on our site? I'm like, sure, go ahead. So they actually took like my meditation, the one I had where I saw like my grandmother and my aunts, and like, they were all like dancing around me and like making me strong. And it was like such a beautiful, I was sitting outside that day, and like, it was just like a beautiful,
beautiful
vision of all of them, and like white, like roses and pink roses and blankets and all this stuff. So I wrote it, and they actually like made a video to it and like put it on their website. And it's just like adorable.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, it's not my grandmother and my aunts like in the video. It's like young women, but it's like the cutest.
Oh, they
like,
have like people cast.
They like made their they made their own video
they
to
had to
it.
Make it that's, viral. You know?
Yes. And it's like the sweetest thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, they really like, but everything I spoke about is like so detailed. I'm like, how did she find these like, like video images so perfectly?
Oh, there's catalogs of shit. I mean,
it's amazing. So now it's like on YouTube and on their website.
Oh shit.
And awesome. Like, it's like my voice, like leading everyone through like a meditation almost.
Wow.
And you know, the funniest part, everyone was laughing about it because I was like, Lucrezia, my grandmother.
Oh, is that your grandma?
They're like, why didn't you just say Nona? I'm like, I don't know.
Because that's not her name.
I mean, yeah. I pray to her every day.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
One of this is the same Nona that I saw. One of the first real spiritual experiences of my life was with your Nona. The video of her with the lights from the nanny cam.
Yes,
of
the orbs.
The orbs coming in, and it looked like. Do you mind if I share this? It was one of the most. It was the first thing that I saw. That's one of the most powerful things I've ever seen, and I was like, oh, and now I'm like, cannot stop talking about like the afterlife because it's so beautiful to have a connection.
We had so many things happen in our family when she was passing, and my grandmother, our Nona, passed of cancer, but at 80, and the dragonflies, and just so many things, the psychic coming up to my mother, like in the supermarket, talking about her, like, who are you? What? My mom was like running away. We're like, Mom, stop, talk to her.
Right. She's like, I don't want to know.
Yeah, she was like, ah.
But to give current context to the listeners' context, there was, I don't know if I told you about this.
This sounds vaguely familiar,
It was a nanny cam video from the fireplace, or the shelf above a fireplace, and it was pointed towards the room that her Nona was in. Mm. The door was open. You saw, I had Daria play it for me multiple times. Is the most powerful thing ever. You saw an orb of light, very clear, like it's not a dust, like you can't really confuse it for anything else. Goes into the room where she is. The explosion of light was so powerful that I don't think there was sound in the video, but you would have thought a bomb went off in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like all this light came out, and then it got sucked back into the room like a vacuum. And I believe, Daria, you told me at that next day, your Nona said, I saw your grandfather.
Yes.
And he came to visit me.
He gave
me
kisses.
Right.
Around the same time we saw the light explosion.
Right. Which now I know I kind of study, I'm obsessed with the afterlife and mediumship and stuff. And there's a lot of people that work in hospice care, and the percentage is like 90% or higher of people
will see this, like a relative who has already passed, come to kind of escort them and stuff. And then the other video, which was crazy, was it the day she passed? The dragonflies.
Swarming the house.
The dragonflies were swarming her house to such a degree that the neighbors started coming out and going, what is happening? Like,
wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Like some really powerful. And I'll never forget when you showed me that video, because I was like, that was a turning point for me specifically. So like, and you do have, Darius shared a lot of other stories, a lot of powerful spiritual people in your family.
We do.
Who are very talented at communicating.
Yes, she was very... Yes, very connected spiritually. And I've been talking to her every day because
yeah. Well, I'm sure she was there in your meditation. Like that yes, was her.
I know.
It's so subtle. Like it feels like you should feel something on your shoulder or something, but it's not. It's if you see her, stuff. It's there.
It's
yeah.
really, it's interesting. I got this prayer card for Saint Teresa. She's a breast cancer saint. And I prayed to the card, and somebody had given me the card who had breast cancer themselves, my mom's neighbor. She said, listen, I can't explain it. Whenever you do say this prayer, you're going to see like a pink rose or a flower shortly after. Don't understand how it happens, but it happens.
Mm.
So I carried that prayer thing with me for about a month. The night before my PET scan, I prayed to it. My girlfriend was bringing me dinner that night because of the meal train.
Yeah.
And I answered the door. Like 2 seconds after I finished this prayer for the first time, her and her daughter are standing there with pink lace.
Mm.
Pink lace. I'm like... I started like,
damn.
I'm like, oh my God. And she's like, what? And I tell her what happened. She's like, Don, that doesn't give you comfort.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know. It does.
Yeah. You got a team of people.
It definitely gave me comfort. So like now I have that with like, you know, all my little things, like my prayer stuff from my grandmother, things that I just kind of like touch and pray to every day.
Yeah. I think
it just kind of like helps. Like,
oh my God.
It makes you feel, you know, like I met a woman like in a waiting room at one of the Sloan waiting rooms when I was getting a scan, and she took my number. She was like really drawn to me and like, you know, she reaches out to see how I'm doing. She reached out that week too.
Oh, wow.
And was like, sent me like a mass about Saint Teresa. I'm like, this is so bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm like, hey, it's gotta be something, you know,
you
have to hold on
is.
To something because it like helps you get through. Like,
and it's so potent. And I think that people like, you want to mind your nutrition, you want to mind your mental health. But I think your spiritual help during having a disease like that is vital. I think it's top three. You have to like, and you have to also, do you have mental side effects from the chemo other than fatigue, like depression?
I mean, the first week that I got the chemo, I felt like really depressed, like after the steroid crash kind of thing. Mm. I was crying a lot and just like really upset. You know, I'm still struggling with it a little bit. I went on. You know, I'm on like a low dose, some like antidepressant right now. I'm taking like a little bit of something for anxiety just because, I mean, it's like life changing, this diagnosis. And I have two kids and I'm trying to like operate my life every day. So I'm seeing a therapist for the first time on Wednesday. So I'm very excited about that.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So that'll be good. Just
for the first time in your life or?
No, the first time like in a while.
Oh,
like
okay.
I haven't gone to a therapist since I was like single many, many years ago.
Right.
Living in the city just for like, you know, regular stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I haven't seen a therapist in so long, but now I'm like, I need one.
Is it a specialty? Like, is it someone who knows how to deal with?
Somebody that's actually dealing with cancer patients.
Oh, wow.
So, because I mean, for a good while, I was just crying every day. I didn't know how to get through. I'm so scared about, you know, my future. Am I going to see my kids grow up? All these kinds of things that it's like, you know, worrying about it every day isn't going to do me any good. I know that.
But I think it's like an interesting part of like grief though. Cause like when we talk about grief, it's also often grieving the loss of someone else. And I think like this is very interesting, like grieving your own situation.
That's what's hard.
Yeah.
I do feel like I'm grieving my old self in a way.
Because
it's hard when we like go out and we're with other people and it's like, you know, I would never want this to happen to anybody. And it's like, I see other people just like having a normal life, having a beer, enjoying themselves. And I'm like, oh, how lucky she is that she doesn't have breast cancer. Like, it's crazy what you think, you know? And it's like, it's isolating. It's definitely an isolating thing. So it's like trying to get the mental health on board. Like, you have to figure that out too, because you could just crumble. I mean,
and I imagine like you got to incorporate humor as often as
absolutely.
You can.
Oh, we laugh. Like, I mean, my husband and I, he was like, you know, my little angel, like after surgery, like showering me and emptying out my drains, doing things that like.
Oh, yeah. You get to see your partner do something for you that you've never seen.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess when you're pregnant. But
it's like he makes it feel like funny and he still makes me feel sexy. So it's like, really? I guess that's that nice. Helps, you know, yeah. Like it's definitely hard because I don't always feel that way, but he's just like, you know, who cares? Like he'd be showering me right after surgery. Like, I want to do you. I'm like, really?
That's like four drains
hanging from me.
Like, so I don't care. You don't care. Right.
Yeah, hey, like, new kink unlocked, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're remaining intimate during chemo. I mean, that's definitely hard, but you know,
that's amazing.
You know, when I feel good, we do it, you know, yeah. Like it's
so good for you. It's oxytocin. I mean, it's just, I mean, sex is just great for you. It's exactly. One of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It is an important thing. We've talked a lot about on Guys We Fucked. We had one episode where Corinne was talking about an instance where a woman was taking care of her, ex-husband. She already had a new partner who was kind of like a vegetable in a way. And, and we were talking about like, yeah, you know, when you marry somebody or when you're like in a long-term partnership, the in sickness and health and all these things you don't understand because you feel healthy and you feel good. And you're like, yeah. We're never going
to
die.
We don't have to worry about
we're
that.
Never going to age. Yep. Nothing's going to go wrong ever.
And you just then, blindly sign that contract.
You do.
Really.
You don't realize what's going to happen. And it's.
And how lovely to have this unfold, this new layer of your romantic partnership, your marriage unfold. And you get to see him show up in this way. That's, I mean, I imagine that just makes it so nice for you. Like it's just, that's so nice. I'm so glad that you have that support system.
It definitely probably would be hard if I was alone, I think.
Yeah. Or had a partner that was like uncomfortable with it.
There are partners that are uncomfortable. Like there are partners that like don't want to like even see a woman's bald head or, you know, things like that. And, you know, we're not there yet, but
how hard for them,
you know, like things like that. Or, I mean,
sorry, you have to look at my scalp.
Or might not go to appointments. Like, I mean, he's gone to every single appointment. He's watched the plastic surgeon circle my boobs and, you know, figure out like what he's going to do. And all those things. And, you know, now he's like, all right, so we'll shave your head. Like, we'll figure it out. And I'm like, I don't know if I want you to shave my head, but we'll see. But
that's,
you know,
that's a team.
It's
baby.
Definitely a team. So, you know, every time I'm crying and I want to go back to 5 years ago when we met and I was this like sultry, confident, beautiful girl with like not a care in the world, you know, like luring him to my apartment. you know, I was like crying to him this morning about it. I'm like, I want to go back to that. And he's like, it's okay. We're here now and we're going to be stronger because of this. Yeah. We might help other couples that go through this and like, you know, show
and what's more
them-
confident than going through cancer? Like what? Like, I mean,
it would almost be
weird if you weren't like crying that you had cancer.
Oh, yeah. It would be so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Cause then I'm like, what, you're going to explode later down the road.
Yeah. No, I let it out. I definitely let it out often.
Because that's good. Like
maybe too much to my family.
No.
Yeah, but that's what family, but when a family member is going through something, you're fucking there for like, let's cry, baby. Like, oh my God. Like that's what family's for. Like you can lean on them. That's amazing that you have between your husband and your sister. I mean, you're fucking. Yeah.
I know.
She's amazing. That's a good ass support system.
she could write a book about how to support somebody through cancer. For sure.
Yeah. So Terry's the fucking best. So we have to wrap up, but, what would you like to promote? What would you like to share? What message do you want to make sure people understand? Let's
that breast cancer literally can happen to anyone. 1 in 8 women, even men. It doesn't discriminate. You can be super healthy. You could be not so healthy. You can be any color, any race. And you can be any age. Literally, it can happen at any age. You know, it's supposed to happen after menopause more often, but we're finding it happening in your 30s, your 20s. I mean, I got my mammogram at 40 and found out I had breast cancer shortly after. So, you know, it can happen literally to everyone. And I wish that I paid more attention to like my breast health. Before this, you know, Breast Cancer Awareness Month every October, I would run 5Ks and all that and do all that kind of stuff and donate money and here and there. But like, I wasn't really like thinking about it, you know, and I guess I want people to like actually think about it and like feel it because it's real and it like totally disrupts your life. And if you can catch it early, that's like the best thing.
Early
detection is like literally key.
Pay attention to your body.
Yeah. Just know your boobs. Check them every month. I saw somewhere that they're not even like saying that you need to do breast self-exams anymore for some reason, but just do them. Yeah. I mean, just feel your own breasts. And if a doctor says wait 6 months, just don't. Just don't wait 6 months. Just, you know, get your mammogram. If your mammogram says you have dense breasts, get an ultrasound.
And to even look at that part of the mammogram, and you're saying the state of New Jersey requires
that they have to let people know.
What does the state of New York do?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, my doctor asked for both off, like right out of the gate.
Immediately, regardless. Yeah,
I don't know that that's New York law, but like they definitely, and also like, and when I went to the office where they did the mammogram, like they were all doing ultrasounds too. Cause I was even going to say, I was like, I started recommending after my GYN recommended to me for people to get their first mammogram at 35.
I think that makes so
much
more
sense. Like you have to request it so that you obviously, so that it can go through your health insurance, but they should like, when she prescribed me to go get the mammogram, she also said like, yeah, breast cancer is on the rise and we're seeing it a lot younger. So now I'm starting 35 and up.
That was a very smart thing to
do.
Yeah.
It should be 35. I mean, it should be 30. It should be after you have a child.
Yeah.
You know, because we're having kids later now. I didn't have my first child till I was 36.
Yeah.
Right, so when you have a baby later in life, that actually increases your risk. Dense breast increases your risk. Know your family's history.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like really know your family's history. Has anyone had breast cancer? Did anyone have prostate cancer? Things that could be linked.
Right.
You know, this is so important. Like the family history, you know, sometimes being overweight can put you at risk, even though thin girls get it too. You know, there's just so much that people really don't think about it.
And then can we talk about this app? Because I was saying to you how, you know, if you're a woman who wears makeup or a man who's wearing, you have lotions you put on your body, you have foundation you have hairspray, you have shampoo, all of these products are chemicals that are being used daily. You mentioned an app. That you can scan the actual product or the label of the product.
Yes, it's called Yuka, Y-U-K-A.
Y-U-K-A.
My aunt actually turned me on to it. And it's like literally you could scan barcodes of food and like products.
Oh, scan the barcode.
Yeah,
awesome.
Just the barcode. And it'll show you if it's like got anything hazardous in it. So like one of my steroid induced nights, I emptied out like three garbage bags of beauty products that I was like, oh my God, there's something horrible in it.
Yeah.
You know, like, and just like toss it.
And it will tell you which chemical is bad. So it's just, okay,
it actually gives you like the hazardous, if it's a moderate risk, low risk, things like that. Like, using it now because now moving forward, I'm just going to make sure like I do everything in my power to like prevent a recurrence and all that, you know, and like just being as healthy as possible. So,
yeah. And is the Meal Train page still open? Will that be open and active for people? Or
yeah, it's still open. I mean, okay, cool. You know,
we'll put it in the description of the podcast. It's going to come out in a couple weeks, but I want to put that in. And also you have blog entries where you kind of detail.
Yeah, I'm going to start writing a little bit. I kind of started like a little blog.
Yeah, that's really helpful.
My So Pink life.
Love it.
I love it.
But yeah, because like when you, like you said, you know, you're looking around at, you know, a couple young couple and they're so happy and you're like, you don't have cancer. I'm so jealous, you know, but it's, you know, when you have this diagnosis, like your reality shifts. And I think that it's really important to hear from people who have had that reality shifted for themselves to hear like how you've managed and how you help yourself through, I think is really, especially if somebody doesn't have a supportive husband or a wife or a family. Like, can't imagine going through that alone. I can't imagine going through that without health insurance.
Yeah.
Jesus
Christ. That could be very
scary
too. And you need a network of people. You need some sort of a community because it's really hard because of that isolating feeling. You kind of like, you know, it's like I find odd comfort now when I see like a thriver. So it's like somebody who's like past, you know, has like living with breast cancer or like past their diagnosis, they're in remission, they're doing really great.
Yeah.
Like if I find that they have triple negative and they were like stage 2 or 3, I'm like, oh my God, they're still alive.
Yes.
And it just makes me feel better. Like, you know, and it's like, it's so morbid, but it's just so like,
it's
great, you know, because like if you Google stuff, it like makes you feel really scared about it. And I would try not to Google things like that, because it's really not good for your mental health.
Yeah.
And, you know, you find people that are like actually doing fine. And, you know, I'm hoping that I, you know, can make it through, you know, for the next 5 years without being stressed every day about recurrence. But, you know, they say that 5-year mark is very important. So,
okay.
You know, it's going to be a little...
Get those gummies, girl.
A little rough.
I know what I'm getting you for Christmas.
But, you know,
a
lot of
mask.
Relaxation.
One of the diesel ones. I got a volcano. I'll give it to you. I don't care. You'll love it.
Anything that helps, you know, try to stay in the moment, which is very hard. But, you know, definitely trying. So.
You're doing great.
Yeah.
I love you. Thank you so much for being
along.
On the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for sitting down and talking to us today. This has been Guys We Fucked, the anti-slut-shaming podcast. We'll talk to you next Friday. Bye. Guys We Fucked is presented by Luminary. Created and hosted by Corinne Fisher and Christina Hutchinson. Editing and music coordination by Mike Coscarelli. Theme song by Rob Patterson and Jake Kozen.
Suck my wet ass pussy.
Christina said to cut that before, but now it's in there.
Yeah, let's keep it. Who cares? This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.